take to potential nugget.
Actually, on that note, CJ, if you will, I want to rewind the clock.
Yeah.
You grew up in India. You went to Lawrence School, Sanawar. Went to Delhi University for your undergrad.
Yeah.
Then went to Oxford at a pretty young age.
Yeah.
And then you were working with a reputed consulting firm, like yes. a lot of us do, a lot of us did. And then a year or two later, stand-up happened.
Yes.
That's a non-trivial transition.
Yeah.
So let's just double-click on that. Tell us, walk us through how that passage of play happened.
That's a long passage of play you're asking me to walk you through. So see, I grew up in a very simple family. My father was a tea planter. He worked for one company for 35 years. Eventually went to the head office in Calcutta. Now, as a child of middle-class parents growing up, what do you do? I mean, we all have this mentality of beta settle ho jao, right? Nobody knows what settle actually means. I think the basic idea is you do school, you do college, you try and do a postgrad degree, you get married, you have two children, then you're settled, right? Never in the Indian way of thinking, is there ever a concept of a gap year, for example, or a, you know, why don't you go out and experiment and discover what it is that you love doing? So I followed the traditional path. I finished my schooling from Sanaa. I got into Delhi University. Post that, I took any job I could. I used to walk the streets of Calcutta trying to convince shops to stock Coca-Cola. Then for 6 months, I worked with Unilever. Now, the fact is, India is such a massive country with such a large population. It is so difficult to compete. I think today, if you want to be a waiter in a five-star hotel, you probably need a postgrad degree. So a BCom isn't enough. I did my the foundation exam for the CA for the Chartered Accountancy course. Yeah. I got an All India rank, wow. But it was just so dull. I mean, I wanted to stab myself. So the MBA was my way out. I remember studying for the GMAT, mm-hmm. and I literally, in fact, I almost failed second year college. Because in the middle of the second day exams, there's a friend of mine who was school captain Sherwood. And we were in Delhi. I said, listen, let's go play golf. And he said, where should we go? I said, let's go to Simla. And he said, no, we can't go middle of the exams. I said, okay, let's toss a coin. So we tossed a coin. I won, went to Simla, came back. I failed two exams, got exact 40%, half a mark less than I would have to repeat second year college. And my friend, school captain Sherwood College, failed second year. So then in my third year, I gave half my papers from second year again. I studied for the GMAT. I worked really hard and somehow got on the Oxford MBA program. Even with the Oxford MBA program, I was going to be the youngest MBA ever because I was 22. And they gave me a deferred admission for 2 years later. And I kind of negotiated my way in because I had gotten to Manchester Business School and a few others at that point. And I called Oxford and said, listen, you want me, you got to take me now. So they literally called back 3 hours later and said, the admissions committee has met and we've decided to let you come in this year. So went to Oxford. Oxford was a tough year because I had to take a loan for my MBA program. My dad was a tea planter who started work at 825 rupees a month. I used to look at Starbucks coffee from outside and could not dream of going in because I could not imagine paying £2 for a cup of coffee. I did more job applications than my entire course put together. I interviewed with, you name it, whether it's a Goldman Sachs, a McKinsey, a L'Oreal, I interviewed with everybody. But most people didn't want to hire a 22-year-old MBA because I was an MBA, so I wasn't an undergrad, yet I didn't have that work experience. Somehow I landed a job with...
And actually, if I may pause here, CJ... At the point of admission, what stood out for them to admit a 21-year-old or a 22-year-old?
My GMAT scores were really high. And I think I was a generally sharp kid. And they must have seen something in the application. I have no clue, man. When you get into some place, you think it's easy. If you don't get in, you think, man, that's a tough place to get into. In fact, I remember I was applying to Harvard and Stanford as well. And you know how all these essays, they have similar questions. Where do you see yourself 5 years from now? And things like that. So I did a cut and paste job. And I sent my entire application to Harvard Business School telling them how I really wanted to go to Stanford. They didn't even bother to reply with a rejection letter. They're like, I remember thinking at that point, damn it, $125.
It might have gone to a different person.
Whatever happened, that was not cool.
Okay, okay.
So yeah, that happened. Got into a consulting firm in London, started working there. Now, that even though that consulting job for the first 3 years was, I went as a young kid who wanted to change the world. I wanted to learn, I wanted to work hard, I wanted to achieve. But for 3 years in that firm, I was completely wasted. I spent half my time on the bench. I had 6 different jobs. It was the kind of firm where you could get into different departments. It wasn't pure consulting. And this was the year 2000. So a lot of people were losing jobs. But purely because I was good with people, I kept getting employed in different parts of the company. Then eventually I figured out a way to get a sabbatical on 35% pay. In fact, I went to my boss and I said, listen, I want to take a year off. And he said, no, you can't take a year off. So I spoke to an HR partner who was a friend of mine. I figured out a deal where you could get 1 year off on 35% pay. Went to my boss, sold him the idea, and both of us left the company on a sabbatical.
Fascinating.
Now, that was the year when I tried lots of things. You know, I set up some schools for underprivileged kids. I learned how to fly paragliders. I trekked up to Mount Everest Base Camp. And that's when I went to the Edinburgh Festival and I saw stand-up comedy for the first time. And I just thought, this is amazing. I mean, here's a guy on stage talking rubbish. He's got a drink in one hand, a microphone in the other hand, and he's just having fun, and that's his job. And I thought to myself, you know what, I'm going to try this. So 3 months later, I got up on stage, did 250 shows in my first 10 months, and didn't look back.
Wow.
Three things struck me in this piece. First, I come across several leaders who are trying to change trajectories when they're driving in full speed, and that's often structurally difficult to pull off. I'm a big believer in the notion of you need to go slow sometimes to go fast later in life. Living a full-on life often leaves very little time for taking stock of the inner world, which is where often the answers lie. Second, is that you need to engage the key stakeholders and manage the transition carefully and smartly. A friend of mine was a partner in McKinsey and was starting up a company. When his company went through a turbulent patch, he went back to McKinsey and consulted with them part-time till the business fortunes picked up. The thing is, we all have an asset of relationships around us, and there's often an opportunity to proactively architect the next steps carefully by engaging the key stakeholders. The third piece is that the answer for what next is often not obvious, and one needs to try different experiences till one arrives at what makes sense. I'm a big fan of the work of Herminia Ibarra, a professor in INSEAD, who's written the book Working Identity, where she talks about crafting a portfolio of experiments and then slowly gravitating towards what makes sense, then a sudden shift from one orbit to another. Thanks for listening.